Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we have an exciting show for you today, depending on your preference for veggies.
Yeah, just like we always do.
Yes, but it's the season to celebrate this magnificent produce, certainly, and so we selected some people who understand vegetables, treat them carefully, starting with Mindy Fox, who is a delightful cookbook author, but she's also a delightful person to talk to, and she's going to be talking to us about her new book, Salads Beyond the Bowl. Mindy Fox is, first of all, she makes the most fabulous recipes. That's all I could say when I picked up the phone to talk to her. We interviewed her before about a chicken. What is it called again, Mindy? A chicken in the oven?
It's called a bird in the oven and then some.
And then some. And it had the most extraordinary recipes.
As opposed to a bun in the oven and then less.
Yes.
Yes. A bird in the oven, referring to roast chicken and then some, is part where you can use your surplus roast chicken to make all sorts of other things.
Right.
Right. We remember that. But this salad thing is getting out of hand. You girls are getting out of hand. All these books about salad.
Oh, yeah. Peter's not a salad person.
No, I don't mind a little green salad, but some of these are almost sound good enough to eat.
Yeah, well, they sure do, and they're unusual. They're very creative. Mindy, are you still a food editor of La Cucina Italiana?
I am, yes.
Yeah, everybody raves about the magazine.
So glad to hear that. Yeah. It's a great magazine, I think, too, and I really enjoy being a part of the team there. And right now we're working on a wonderful pasta issue, which is going to come out in September. Sorts of our handmade pastas, like if you ever wanted to make your own farfalle or orchietti or all sorts of things. Things you've maybe never heard of, like kapunti, just wonderful shapes that you can make with your own two hands.
Yeah, we interviewed that guy, that wonderful genius of the book, The Geometry of Pasta.
Right.
Oh, I love that book.
I do, too. It's such a simple idea. Why didn't we all think of it first?
It's a gorgeous formative.
We also went to his restaurant. He has a cookbook out about his restaurant, too, and we went there.
Yeah,
oh, good. I'll have to look into that.
He's in London.
Yeah, but what's the name of the restaurant?
He always asks me that. How the hell can I remember? I got the dozens of restaurants we go to.
What salads did you all have there? That's what I wanted to know.
Well, I was talking along the lines of pasta. We had the most spectacular pasta. We're in Southern Tuscany, but also Umbria, and including this. How about this one? Fresh, handmade ravioli stuffed with asparagus served with, what was it, the porcini mushrooms, truffle sauce, and shaved mounds of shaved black truffle.
That sounds wonderful. Well, maybe we should do another interview about pasta shapes in La Cucina Italiana.
We will do that. When it comes
in the future.
In the meantime,
why don't we talk about this book about salads, yeah.
Yeah, now, you start with very, very basic, your basic salad, but then you go way, way beyond that.
And the name of the title of the book is Salads Beyond the Bowl. And yes, I do start with, I think it's about 25 or so, what I call elemental salads. And these are inspired by sort of a nightly ritual that I found myself doing as sort of a pattern, where I would just get home from a long day and reach into the fridge and sort of put together a beautiful salad out of, sort of surprising myself, out of what I could find there, because we don't always have time to shop every day, even though we would like to. So sometimes there's a lone bulb of fennel and maybe a lemon and a little bit of Parmigiano Reggiano and some black pepper around, and mm-hmm. you take the fennel, even something this simple, and if you have some fennel fronds attached, you're lucky, and you can thinly slice the fennel and chop up the fronds and lay those out on a plate and drizzle with really nice olive oil and some coarse sea salt and a little lemon juice and some pepper. And the thing is that even something as simple as that can make a beautiful salad. In fact, I prepared that for my in-laws one night when they were visiting from Louisiana, where they live, and my mother-in-law said, "What is this? This is so delicious." She didn't realize it really was just shaved fennel.
Oh, right. You talk about shaved fresh artichokes, raw artichokes, which is another one nobody ever thinks about.
Yes. I mean, really the point of the first chapter is that even just a couple ingredients can be turned into a beautiful salad. And I think the first chapter, you could maybe think, oh, that's a nice idea, but does it really work? And yes, it does.
Well, try to explain my 7 secrets to extraordinary salads. They seem self-evident, but they are so essential.
I think they're essential, and all of cooking, all sorts of things about cooking, is it comes down to a craft, and if you don't do it, and maybe if you don't do it every day, I do it every day because it's part of my job, but I do it some days and some weeks for 10 hours at a time, for weeks at a time, and then I spend time at my computer and looking at layouts and other things. But it's nice to be reminded, like when you're making a soup or a salad, the essentials of that dish.
Okay,
and
then the first
once
one.
You sort of, yeah, when you have that in front of you, you can always go back to it. So my 7 secrets of extraordinary salads has to do with, number one, sourcing impeccably, kind of a reminder that all of the best dishes that you'll ever eat anywhere, even if it's just something as simple as a shaved fennel and Parmigiano Reggiano salad with a little olive oil and some good sea salt, comes down to good ingredients. So if you go to the store and you're sort of en route to making something with eggplant, but the eggplant doesn't look good, it's better to forgo that and maybe try something else instead. And it's really best to just source out the best ingredients, even if it's, and that doesn't mean spending a lot of money. It just means passing up something that doesn't look so great for something that
right.
does look great. And also having really good olive oil and salt. And those come,
oh,
that's
yes.
part of the 7 secrets that comes later, too.
And how to store it, because that, it's amazing how many people let their olive oil go rancid.
Exactly. So we'll get, so do you want me to go through the other 6 secrets, too?
Well, tell me, what do you think is the most violated one?
As long as you can do it between now and next Wednesday.
In terms of salad, I think a very violated one is that if you don't prep your greens with care,
they're soggy.
You're going to end up with bruised greens, and if you have bruised greens, they kind of taste funky, and nobody likes funky-tasting greens.
Right.
They
That's
just
really
lose
super.
Their freshness and their vibrancy, and they taste kind of really funky is the best word I could
funky
you know, not fresh,
true.
Bruised greens, and they taste kind of bad. So when I say prepping greens with care, and I mean everything from washing, drying, and handling them gently, and also tossing them
carefully.
In a large bowl. And then there's more details in the book about exactly how to do that.
Lots of details, and I think that they're very important to pay attention to. People who say they don't like salads probably don't even prepare them properly.
Another egregious mistake is overdressing a salad.
No, I mean, I have friends who ask me to dress it because they can't not overdress. You know,
yeah, I think the best thing I could say is, and I say this about cooking pasta al dente, it's the same kind of thing. When you think you don't think it's done or you think it's just getting done, that's the time to take the pasta out of the water instead of saying, well, I think it's almost there, but I'll just let it go 1 or 2 minutes more. That's usually when you end up overcooking it. With salads, if you could just start, you start with less than you think you need and get used to sort of tasting it along the way.
Yeah.
Try it with less than you think you need a couple times, and then you'll get used to, I think you adjust after that to dressing it properly with just the right amount and not too much.
Now, Mindy, you have some salads in this book that I look at and I think that can't possibly work.
Okay, like?
Red oak lettuce with spiced popcorn, drunken cherries, and goat gouda.
And that's actually one of my favorite
I'm sure
ones.
It's delicious because I trust
I love
you.
That one. There's a lot going on. I'm glad that you pointed that one out because in terms of salads, texture, flavor is, of course, important. A little bit of, there's usually a little acidic and salt, acidic elements like vinegar or lemon juice or something else acidic, usually vinegar or lemon juice or lime juice. Or any other citrus. And for me, I do use cheese quite often. You don't have to, and some people don't like cheese, and some people have issues with dairy, so you can always leave that off. And I do like peppery elements. So whether it's black pepper, or in this case, the popcorn is spiced with a little bit of cayenne pepper and black pepper.
Right.
And salty elements. So those are things that kind of show up a lot. And in this case, they work well because there's, and textural element. And that's what's exciting to people about good salads, I think. When you have a really good salad, there's color, and there's flavor, and there's textural elements, and that's where the popcorn comes in. And if you think about the fact that you might have salads with nuts or seeds, and you like that, like when there's toasted almonds or toasted pine nuts in a salad, popcorn kind of plays that sort of role. But it's a little unique, and it's really fun in this recipe, and it's gorgeous, and it's unexpected, and it's a good conversation piece at a dinner party.
You know, here's this beautiful photograph of this blueberries with feta and mint.
Yes, and that's a salad that every single interview that I've done so far, or and every many of the articles that have been written so far about this book have identified that salad. It really seems to pop out for people, and that is a very surprisingly delicious salad that isn't dessert. Although it could be served as dessert, sort of the way a cheese course can be served as dessert, a savory kind of dessert. Here you're using fruit with feta, cheese, and mint leaves, and very good sea salt. I use a coarse sea salt, but so you, when you're biting in into the blueberries, and really good olive oil. And it's actually the shortest recipe in the book.
Oh, three ingredients.
Sure. It's only a few ingredients, and it's the shortest instructions in the book. And just people have really gone bonkers for this salad. It's beautiful, and especially with the blueberries in season now, it's a really lovely and super-duper easy.
And surprising.
Surprising.
It captures your imagination,
It does, and I actually love doing this either as a little salad, or it's really nice spooned over like lamb chops or venison.
Oh, nice.
When you're doing, you could do lamb. This would be a beautiful summer dish with lamb chops.
Sounds great. The other thing I really was impressed by, I'm generally tuned into the use of these ancient grains, and you have a number of salads with those. Here's one. One of my favorite grain is this frika stuff.
I love frika.
I love
and
it, too.
It's definitely kind of new. It's funny. It's a new old grain, right? It's one of those new old grains. So it's kind of new on the scene, but it's a really ancient grain, and it's a Middle Eastern grain, and you can find it at Middle Eastern shops and good supermarkets. I've definitely seen it's becoming a trend, so more supermarkets are getting it, but
now,
it's always in Middle Eastern markets. And it's less expensive when you buy it in Middle Eastern shops.
We interviewed the guy who...
There was an Australian guy.
...decided to commoditize it or whatever you were talking about.
Yeah, I've seen his. Yeah.
Well, we interviewed him from Australia. He's Australian.
Yes.
Wow.
When it was... That was a long time ago. It was the first shipment... I was on the boat, Frika, coming to the U.S.
Yeah, we don't really know what happened. He was a funny guy. He was kind of shy... Or shall we say, he didn't want to tell too much because
he was secretive. Is the word you want?
That's just what I'm looking for. he had figured out a new way of making it in a little bit quicker, I think, somewhere in South Australia. But he didn't want to tell us too much about it, and I don't know whether the product ever took off because I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh no, I've seen the recipes using it. I've known that because people are aware of it. They must have access to it if they're using it.
I don't know. I mean, you could get freaky from somebody else besides this same guy, I suppose.
Maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I came across it the first time at my farmer's market here in New York City by an organic producer up in New York State called Cayuga Organic.
Oh.
And that's a good source for mail order if any of your listeners want to mail order it. Or I would really encourage going to the Middle Eastern markets. And you can get whole frika or you can get cracked frika.
Yes,
and it doesn't matter which one you use. Whole frika, kind of, I like the way it looks because you get the big whole, you get the wholer, the more complete whole piece of each grain. But it really doesn't matter. It's delicious either way.
Now, just to finish off this frika salad, it sounds to me like a spring thing because you have it with fava beans, grilled asparagus, and roasted lemon. And it reminds me that actually, as you go through this book, the salads become more substantial, don't they?
That's right. So the book is broken up into sections. So we started off, we were talking about those elemental salads, which I like to sometimes do a whole dinner, making like six or seven of those and just eating. If I'm doing a dinner party, you could do that, or you could just serve a couple with cocktails at the beginning. They're sort of smaller things. And then the next chapter is leaf salads, like the one you pointed out with the popcorn, and other salads where the primary ingredient is leaves of lettuces and things. And then I took a sort of second look. I took a modern take of egg, potato, and pasta salad. And one of my favorite salads in that is the muffaletta pasta salad.
That was really fun.
Because my husband's from Baton Rouge, and we have really good friends in New Orleans, so we spend a lot of time down there. And of course, I go crazy every time we go down there, going to every different restaurant and trying all the different things. And the food culture is so rich, and so it's fun to take something like a muffaletta sandwich and turn it into a pasta salad. And it's one of my favorites. It's really tasty and it's fun. Yes, you pointed out the beans, grains, and legumes chapter, which is just really healthy, hearty. Bean, grain, and legume salads.
And then you add things like duck and fish. And
right. So then the last three chapters are, there's a chapter with fish with salads, a little bit of poultry and game with salads, and a little bit of meat with salads. So those are salads that sort of are more substantial, like you were saying, and you could serve as the main course to your meal. And I eat salad. I really do truly eat salad every day.
I do too.
I'm drawn to eating salad. So
I do too.
This is the book I've really wanted to do for so long. And I'm
well,
so
this
happy
is a book that
out.
Everybody really, I had no hesitation recommending your chicken book, but this is even, this goes into even newer territory for most people. And I think that if you want to put excitement into your life, this is a great book to get, Mindy. A Salad Beyond the Bowl, and we're talking to the author, Mindy Fox, and I think it's a must-have. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It means so much to hear that, and I'm so glad you do love it.
And don't go away, because we'll be back after a very short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Thanks for staying with us. We now, as I said, salads are good for you, and our next guest, Tasha DeSirio, actually believes this too, because she wrote a book, another book, and this is when it's called A Salad for Dinner.
Now this is this. I remember this one, and you, I can't remember if Mindy sent it or not, but it's okay to put some meat in their recipes.
Oh yeah, right.
so they don't think you're going altogether green or what's the word?
I mean, not all
or vegan or anything like that. These are just very sensible ways to make the best out of the wonderful produce that we get throughout the year, but especially at this particular season. So here's Tasha.
Salads have become our latest hero in our eating program. And, in fact, a number of books have been written on the subject. I'm looking at one now as we set out to interview the author, Tasha DeSirio, and this one's title is very self-explanatory, Salad for Dinner, Simple Recipes for Salads That Make a Meal. And isn't that something that's very liberating, isn't it, Tasha?
Absolutely, yes. I do think that salads are coming around and are taking center stage on the plate and no longer playing a hoarding role to meet another rich items.
I think that you say a lot, though, in the varieties of salad by the organization that you've put onto your cookbook. Explain how you've broken this book down.
The book is divided according to leafy salads, vegetables and fruits, and then grains and legumes.
Right. I particularly like legumes.
So it's sort of built around, well, I feel like a legume tonight.
Absolutely.
Or I feel like a something or other tonight.
Absolutely.
But can I use the index to help me figure out which of those recipes I might actually be able to make because I have what's required in my refrigerator?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I really also tried to just give a lot of options, and my goal in writing it was to give you some recipes for inspiration and obviously to follow when you need or want to, then also just to give you a springboard to bounce off of and create your own salads, hopefully.
And now it's not like you haven't got a claim to some expertise in this department, I guess. Because you worked in what most people would consider probably one of the greenest kitchens on the planet, Chez Panisse.
Yes, yes. I had the good fortune of working at Chez Panisse.
Now you have a business that essentially you're catering along the same lines?
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you eat for dinner?
What do I eat for dinner? I do have a fair amount of salads for dinner.
Burgers and fries, I'll bet.
I do enjoy a good burger every now and again. But like anybody else, we have a eat differently every night of the week. But we have a beautiful garden out back, and my husband grows a lot of lettuce. Right now we actually have an abundance of fava beans, so we're eating a lot of fava bean salads, actually, right now.
Well, I love fava, but we were in Italy, and this winery chef presented us with lunch and included four separate preparations of fava beans.
Wow. I would actually love to hear more about that.
They were wonderful. One was a typical salad from the area. I guess it's fava beans with boiled, what were those little potatoes? They're like fingerling potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And what else was in that salad?
I don't remember. There was one that had artichokes in it. I remember that.
I had artichokes. That was it.
So, but
artichokes, potatoes.
These were the very famous fava beans from a town in Sicily called Leonforte, which specializes in gigante, in really big fava beans.
And really big fava beans.
Yes.
You know those Greek beans, the gigante, the really large Greek beans?
Mm-hmm.
Well, fava beans from Leonforte come in that size.
Wow. Yeah, ours are really tiny here. They get larger as the season goes on, but the ones that we're enjoying right now are actually small and really tender. They're lovely right now.
Now, you mentioned your husband as someone who helps you with the garden. You say he tasted a lot of the recipes, but he was more like a sort of a man-eater before?
Yes. Well, he still is.
He
still is, yes. So I definitely, if we're having salad for dinner, then, it can't be a spa salad, for lack of another description. I mean, it has to be hearty enough to satisfy him and then also to satisfy two young boys as well.
So you're surrounded, huh?
Yes, I'm surrounded.
You're surrounded by maleness, so I guess.
Yes, yes.
Now, what are some of your family's favorites? And then we'll come back to say which are your favorites, and we'll find out if they're the same.
Well, my kids, they like simplified versions of a lot of the salads in the book, because they really did test almost all the salads with us. You know, we'd have them for dinner. But right now, they're really enjoying the fava beans as well. And they love it when I combine vegetables with rice and simple grains. They actually really enjoy farro. We eat a lot of farro in the house as well. And salads that have kids, I think, they love starch. So if we can get something like that on the plate for them and swaddle it with vegetables, they'll usually eat it.
Now, you include a number of pasta salads, too. Now, pasta salads have gotten a bad rap because anytime there's one of those, what do you call them, where you each bring a dish?
Potluck.
Potluck, yes.
Everybody brings pasta salad.
Yes.
But what are your hints and suggestions, I guess I want to say tips, about giving pasta salad a little bit more finesse?
I think one of the biggest things with pasta is that it's really best if it's room, kind of like a warm room temperature. You know how the noodles tend to get hard when they get cold, and I find that kind of unpleasant. I also really like to experiment with different types of pasta. So the whole wheat pastas, I think, make a particularly nice pasta salad. When you combine them with, there's a recipe in the book that has, I believe it's broccoli or broccoli rabe, and made with the whole wheat pasta. And it's actually, broccoli rabe packs a nice punch, and the wheat noodles are a nice counterpoint to that. Farro pasta is actually really delicious as well. So I think we can kind of go beyond just the standard penne pasta and get a little more creative.
And you have tips for also like the kinds of dressings to use. I think the thing that really undoes most people is that they drown their ingredients in salad dressings. And you warn against that.
Yes. You want it dressed nicely so that it tastes good. Obviously, that's the goal, that it tastes good. Oftentimes, it's more important to adjust the acid and the oil so that it's all kind of in balance before you dress something, because if the dressing isn't acidic enough and kind of pack enough punch, and you go to dress something, it's going to taste flat, and our instinct might be to continue adding more vinaigrette when really we might just need a little more acid or even more salt.
Right, salt really does it, doesn't it?
Yes. That's a key point we should mention, that it's always important to season every element of a salad. People often overlook even just seasoning the greens in the bowl before they add the vinaigrette and toss a salad. That's really important.
One dressing that I'm not sure I could go with that you recommend is, for a vinaigrette, using rendered duck fat or pork fat. I'm not sure I could do that.
Oh, you know, that sounds a little more scary than it actually is. So maybe, for example, if you were rendering some bacon to put in the salad, then you might just use some of that bacon fat in the vinaigrette.
Would it be hot or cold?
It's definitely warm. Those are for warm vinaigrette.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, so you'll have a warm, you'll have a little bit of rendered bacon fat in the pan. I oftentimes pour some of the bacon fat off and then use some bacon fat and then some olive oil as well. And then you can saute your shallots or garlic briefly and then add your acid and a little more olive oil to finish it.
And we have so many things now that they never used to have, these nut oils that are fabulous in salads.
Yes. Nut oils, you have to be careful of. They pack a punch and they can kind of take over really quickly. They can also go rancid pretty quickly, so you want to make sure you have a nice, fresh nut oil.
It took a while reading labels to realize that a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of the oils, the nut oils, are supposed to be refrigerated after opening.
Yes, that definitely helps keep them fresher.
My thing that I'm loving the most now, it's this avocado salad. It's a guacamole made with, it's avocado and toasted pistachios and pistachio oil, which is really good.
I don't think I've ever tried pistachio oil. I'll have to look out for that.
I can't remember where we had that, but it was really good. Some restaurant. That was a place in New York, wasn't it?
If I turn my microphone back on, I'll be able to tell you it was Boulou Soud.
It was a Boulou Soud, yes it was.
When we had Sunday lunch cooked by a fellow Yorkshireman.
That sounds delicious.
From Yorkshire where the pudding comes from, but instead it was fennel. It was fennel.
Oh, fennel.
It was fennel, and there was another green, and avocado, and
toasted
pistachios and pistachio oil. And it was delicious.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious, actually.
It's really good.
So you better issue it as an update to salad for dinner.
Exactly. Salad for dinner, too.
Which brings us to another thing, which is very useful, because you have a website, so you're in a position where if you try this and you think you like it and you want everybody else to like it, you can put it up on your website. So why don't you tell our listeners where they can get in touch with you for things like that?
They can go to TashaDeSerio.com, and that's TashaDeSerio.com.
Okay, that sounds good.
So you're never going to run out of things to do, because you're going to be bombarded by On the Menu listeners saying, now I made this, and I made that, and I made that.
I hope so.
Well, anyhow, I wish you a lot of luck with this book, because I think we're getting into the right season for it, too, with all the fresh stuff coming out of the garden. And we have blossoms on our tomato plants, which is really good for mid-Atlantic.
Since I didn't buy any salad greens for dinner tonight, we're going to have to forage in the garden.
Oh, yeah, we do that. Peter calls it stick salad.
So we're having salmon with
stick salad
with with mushrooms and stick salad. What's your answer to that?
That's another idea for salad for dinner too. Stick salad.
Well, we have arugula grows wild in our garden now.
Yes, we have some wild arugula that just takes over in our garden.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and it's actually very nice to have on hand. That and kale, strangely.
I've never tried kale.
You should try it.
I mean, we eat it cooked, but I never tried it
well,
raw.
Well, we've cooked small kale. We've had the thinnings of kale plants. We're in the wrong season for me to grow kale right now. It's just not happy. I don't know why, but it didn't come up properly. And then when it came up, it bolted.
It's just been too hot. We had no spring, really.
In Berkeley, we have a fairly mild, sometimes even cold summer. So kale tends to go pretty well all year round here. So we saute it and fold it into a lot of salads. And in the early spring is usually when we enjoy the raw kale Caesars, which is actually very good.
It's in your book, yeah.
Yes.
And I was thinking I should try that one.
So around the world, listeners, get your hands on some kale wherever you are, wherever it's in season, and you now have several new recipes you can use.
And don't forget to top everything with a poached egg. That's what they do in France.
You know, we have chickens as well, and we are big fans of the poached egg with salad around here.
That's what you got. In Italy, the asparagus always comes with a poached egg on top.
Well, you know, I think that's one thing that as Americans we tend to forget about eggs for dinner, and it really is. We've just done it now because we're inundated with eggs since we have 12 chickens. So
oh, wow.
We eat a lot of eggs.
Oh, I envy you. That's great.
They're fun. They are. They're very fun.
Well, you sound like you're enjoying your lifestyle, so carry on and have great success with this book.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Tasha. Good meeting you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be meeting another interesting guest right after this short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
And here we are again, and we're going to take you next to New Haven, Connecticut. And if you think that we've been talking about this new fascination and enthusiasm for vegetarian and even vegan food as the latest trend, we're going to introduce you to Claire Crisciolo, who has been actually doing this at her restaurant, her vegetarian restaurant, for 35 years. Here's Claire. Now, talk about a really clever name for a restaurant. Claire's Cornucopia. I just love it.
Thank you. Yeah. I can't take credit for it. One undergrad at Yale.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we basically had a blank sign up for a while. We decided to have a contest to name the restaurant.
Oh, very clever.
And Jeff Hall, who during his junior year at Yale married Lisa Barca, and the two of them became Barca Hall. Yeah, and he named the restaurant and won a hot fudge sundae for four people for a year.
Oh, wow. Now, this is Claire Crisciolo, and you and your husband were really, really way ahead of your time in founding this vegetarian restaurant with such consciousness about sustainability, kindness to the planet, good husbandry, 35 years ago,
We've been blessed.
And so this is not even your first cookbook, is it?
No, this is actually my fourth.
Right.
Hard to believe.
Right.
Time goes by.
How does it feel that all these things that you were instrumental in launching that many years ago are suddenly now very on trend and popular?
Well, I'm so proud. We have talked about this as a couple, as a group for a long time, how proud we are that we have been able to introduce people to the old way. I know a lot of people think they're moving forward.
Exactly.
I think we wanted to move back to when my grandparents and my parents made real food, didn't put chemicals in the ground, but actually put healthy bugs. You wanted a soup, you made a soup. You didn't open a can. When you wanted a vegetable, you had a vegetable. Not bombarding flavors with other flavors, but really tasting a real cauliflower, a real tomato. So I was spoiled. And I think we're very proud of that. But I think that, and now, you get a chuckle when we hear farm to table. What else is there?
Exactly.
At the same time, we are thrilled because the more people who enjoy real food, the healthier our country will be, the healthier the world will be. Because I think I'm an old registered nurse. So for me, I look at it like prevention. If you can have a delicious way to potentially prevent illness, that's a pretty nice place to be. I'm thrilled.
Now, your restaurant's in New Haven, Connecticut. And so you have an enlightened group there and people who would be very receptive to your concept, right?
Without a doubt. I don't know that we could have done this anywhere else but Yale University or maybe another, as I like to say, lesser Ivy League campus. I don't know that we could or couldn't have, but I do know that because we have people from all over the world who come to Claire's, who come to Yale, I know that it afforded us a bigger audience, a more receptive audience. advanced. Although we still had to do a lot of education. I mean, people just did not know what organic meant.
Now, did you know that 35 years ago when you started, or did it sort of grow with the restaurant? The idea of being organic and sustainable and farm-to-table, I mean, did you start the restaurant with that in mind?
Oh, yes. We wanted to make everyone's, as I used to call it, everyone's grandmother's food. I started worrying when I went away to college. Well, first of all, I had to move back home. Luckily, I was only 30 minutes away because I just couldn't imagine. I didn't have exposure to food that was so different from my mother's food. And I remember the conversation. I said, Mom, I'm moving home. And she said, did something happen? She said, I can't eat the food. I said, I think the soup was out of a can. And she started laughing. And she said, well, honey, you know, of course it was out of a can. That's a big school. I said, well, you don't make soup out of a can. And why can't they just do the math? Multiply what you do. And she sort of said, honey, that's just not the way it is. So I moved home. But so I think early on, we intended to have real food, and to us, real food meant, I mean, we didn't call it organic. We just called it food that didn't have chemicals. Why would you put all those things on it? Why would you put things that potentially have to be unhealthy?
Now, you were raised by an Italian family?
Oh, yes.
So I'm assuming you were not raised vegetarian.
Actually, all those Italian Catholic Fridays,
oh, yeah,
and all those Italian Catholic Wednesdays and Fridays during Lent, we absolutely, and my mother, and also, we were really poor. My mother cleaned houses for a living.
Uh-huh.
And we were very poor, and she didn't have a lot of money for meat, which turned out to be in our benefit. And
right.
She also didn't have money for conveniences. I don't know that she would have fallen into the convenient trap, but she didn't have money to buy conveniences. So when we wanted pizza, she made pizza dough. She wouldn't waste money on a container of freshly squeezed orange juice. She would buy oranges, which were much cheaper, and squeeze them by hand, just as a lemon. Lemonade came from lemons, water, and sugar.
And did they also have a garden? Because I know I had a garden, too. My whole family garden.
Yes. My grandfather gardened, my mother gardened, I gardened. In fact, quite heavily for the restaurant.
You've had all kinds of recognition. And why do you think that you have? I mean, is it your long-term commitment, or is it, I notice that these recipes are really very creative. You give a little, you give some spark to this, your dishes.
Thank you. I think I cook the way my mother cooked. I cook the way her mother cooked. Sometimes I don't know why we get recognized. I mean, I'm grateful. I don't want to appear ungrateful, but we're just making real food. We're not making fancy food. In fact, people refer to us as supremely casual, and we are. It's like coming to your mother's kitchen. You walk in the door, and people say it all the time. They say, it feels so happy here. It feels like being home. And that has its drawbacks, because when we want to move something or change something, especially the students, very careful now. We make sure we make these changes during the semester, because if we make the changes during the summer when they're gone, they come back very upset, as though we've made their bedroom into a sewing room at home. No, and they've said that. So we're very careful about that. But we just introduced a new sweet and sour soy chicken this week because our customers were saying we love the chipotle and the buffalo, but sometimes we don't want a hot and spicy. Try to do that.
No, this is very interesting because you just mentioned chicken. So the implication is that there are, in fact, recipes with meat in, but in fact, what you're doing is you're introducing a soy version of chicken or a soy version of beef or a soy version of something else. You're introducing a vegetable protein instead of an animal protein.
Exactly, because we remind everyone all the time that whether you eat a vegetarian diet or whether you eat a meat-centered diet, the rules are exactly the same. You need good, healthy protein. You need complex carbohydrates. You want vitamins and minerals. You want good fats so you can metabolize all those good fat-soluble vitamins. So it's the same rules. So we do vegetable protein, whether it's beans and legumes and grains or soy meats or now maybe wheat meat or maybe pea protein meat.
Well, no, I was actually going something slightly different. I wanted you to answer that question exactly in those terms, but then I wanted to go on and ask a follow-on question, because during the era when your mother was cooking and your grandmother were cooking, they didn't have the soy-based proteins.
No.
They were more truly vegetarian, I guess.
Oh, exactly. So they made escarole and beans. My mother made peppers and eggs. She made frittatas. She made beans with everything. She stuffed every vegetable, whether it was escarole or tomatoes or zucchini or blossom, big stuffers.
Now, is it legit to use real beef or real chicken in place of the soy versions that you have in your recipes?
I love when someone asks me that, because that really means we've come full circle. Years ago, people used to write to me or call me and say, would it be okay if I took one of the recipes I had already, like my mother's recipe and used soy beef instead. And I say, well, that's exactly what I did. Absolutely. But now to have that opposite question asked, that's a pretty cool thing. Like somebody would buy a vegetarian cookbook or have a vegetarian recipe and want to be able to use it in different ways. That's beautiful.
Now, is that allowed? I mean, that's permitted.
This is not a religion for us. And while we, of course, encourage people to eat more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and less meat, if that's what people eat occasionally, like an indulgence, why not?
Now, let's go back to the book itself and talk a little bit about how it's organized. Because it's organized in altogether too sensible a fashion, starting with breakfast and going on from there.
They did a good job with that. Globe Pequod really did a nice job, and I love that they let us put sections like categories with vegan or gluten-free or an option
Peter
for that.
Peter loved that. He loved his code thing.
I like that. They did a nice job with that. They talked about doing sort of like little hearts and things like that, and I thought, can we just put the real word or at least the letters that let people know so you don't have to go back and say, oh, goodness, was the heart this or was it that?
No, I thought that was really good. I noticed that only later I noticed that each individual recipe also had the same label on it, but really truly most useful if you're actually using the index to try to find something. Let's suppose I have such and such an ingredients available to me. What recipe can I make with them tonight is often a thing that a cookbook like yours is very useful for. So you've gone the extra mile and said, this can be vegan, this can be gluten-free, this has a gluten-free option, this is a vegan option, but it can be just vegetarian. So it really makes it quite straightforward and really a remarkably thoughtful addition, as you said. And you credit a publisher with doing that?
Thank you. Without a doubt. They really, I didn't know how we would do it. I just requested that we were somehow able to do it, because these are questions we get from our customers all the time. Someone will come in and say, I love that, can we make it vegan? Or I love that, can it be gluten-free? Our customers have charged us with that because as their needs have come up, really got involved in the gluten-free effort, because maybe about 5 years ago, a young freshman came in tears.
Aww.
Newly diagnosed with celiac disease. Now imagine, I kept thinking, imagine this poor kid, she's away from home for the first time, and she gets diagnosed with this. She was so scared. And so my immediate reaction as a woman and as a former nurse was, okay, don't get nervous. We will figure it out. We'll help. And that's how we really got involved, saying, okay, we need to know more about this.
It's huge, huge.
Oh, it's become a huge issue. Just yesterday we had a mom in with a young boy with celiac disease. So we're happy to help. Be able to share a meal with someone, to be able to go out and socialize, to be able to go out and eat sort of like everyone else, that's an honor. It's a privilege to be able to help with that. It really is, and our staff are so amazing. They just, I mean, people come in and say, okay, I can't eat this, this, and this. We're like, okay, let's see. And they're really good about that.
Now, an obvious question. How is it that a nice Italian girl like you ends up with a signature coffee cake that's Lithuanian?
It was Sally Tesler's mother's coffee cake. And because I'm Italian, when Sally gave me the recipe, she told me about her mother's terrific coffee cake. She brought me the recipe, and I'm looking at it and thinking, why would a coffee cake not have coffee in it? Not realizing, I mean, for us, I don't know, growing up we didn't have coffee cakes. We had biscotti, we had anginettes, we had Italian versions of things. And it was so precious because I didn't want to say anything and be rude, so I just thought I would change it around a little and put coffee. So when Sally tasted it, she said, God, this tastes better than my mom's. I said, oh, it's always like that when you're out of the house. And so we were calling it Sally Tesler's mother's coffee cake. So one day I said, Sally, the name is just way too long. What else can we call it? Where's your mother from? And she said, well, it was my grandmother's recipe, but we can't even do that because it was Lithuania, and now it's part of the Soviet bloc. So we made a joke and said, let's start the revolution for freedom with the cake. And we made this big joke about it, so we started saying, Lithuanian coffee cake, say it.
And you've been immensely successful, so it's not it's not true that Gorbachev was responsible for Glasnost and Reagan, the movie star and TV star, was the one who really broke up the Soviet Union.
You know,
it was really clear.
Well, we laugh about it because afterwards she called me and said, "So what do you think, the cake?" And I said, "Don't I wish if only food could help toward peace like that?" But just in case, we have started doing the Tibetan curry.
Okay.
Okay, and you probably do freedom fries every time anybody's in a hate of the French. You do freedom fries too, I'll bet.
Oh goodness! Actually, we love the French. We love ratatouille.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Now I must say that the charm of this book is that it's also, not only are there endless peeling and creative recipes, but you lace the whole book with your personal style, and also with memories and anecdotes, stories about everything, so that it all comes to life. I can only congratulate you on having really accomplished so much in your life and in this book.
Thank you so much. I have to say, we get love letters from our customers so often that I had to include them in the book.
Oh, yes. I meant to mention that, too. Right.
And the essays, customers always ask about the recipe. They'll always say, tell me about the recipe. And so I started telling these stories about the recipes and sometimes just writing essays. I really love it. When you tell a story about the recipe, because every recipe has a story, whether you heard it from, I don't know, the person cutting your hair who happened to be from Russia, or whether you heard the recipe or whether it was a recipe you grew up on as a kid or something to do when you have just too much zucchini.
That's for sure. Well, the title is Welcome to Claire's, 35 Years of Recipes and Reflections from the Landmark Vegetarian Restaurant. Listeners, I mean, it's just a charmer of a book and useful.
I have a last question for you.
Is it
like Minnesota? We had somebody on who wrote a cookbook, and they had a zucchini recipe, and they said, the story goes, in Minnesota, if you leave the windows of your car wound down, someone will fill your car with zucchini.
No, we get instead people calling saying, we have too much zucchini, what do we do? Tell them, bring it to a church, bring it to a synagogue, there will be somebody there who wants it.
Claire, again, thank you so much for joining us on the menu. Today we'll make it to New Haven, and we'll have the opportunity to experience the pleasure of meeting you in person. In the meantime, I think we know what a wonderful person you are, and it's just been great to have you here on the program today.
Thank you so much. I hope you come. And if you do come, let me know, because I want to show you around.
Okay. You got it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Claire.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be back with an interview with one of New York City's top young chefs who has a feeling for vegetables, too, right after this short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Chef Dan Kluger works for no less a luminary than Jean-Georges Van Gerichten in New York. And he won Best Restaurant Nationwide for his cooking at the James Beard Awards in 2011. It took us a year after that to catch up with him, and it's taken us a little while to get him into the program.
Yeah, I think we should specify that ABC Kitchen, in my most favorite store in the whole world, ABC Home, is not a vegetarian restaurant, because a lot of reviewers sort of indicate it is. It's just that Dan has this understanding, deep understanding of vegetables, and he is expert at presenting them in the most luscious way imagining.
Which of course he did for us, and we had a fine old time, and you should go there because you'll have a fine old time too.
Yeah,
and
so here's Dan Kluger. Well, it was well over a month ago when we were in New York City for the James Beard Awards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it was one of the highlights of our trip because it was...
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Well, we haven't even said where it was yet.
No, I know. We're talking to Dan Kluger, who's the chef at ABC Kitchen, which is in ABC Home, which might be my most favorite store in the whole world. So it's nice to have ABC Kitchen right there, too.
I was very strategic, Dan. We arrived just in time for lunch, and we had an appointment right after lunch, so we didn't have to do any damage buying light shades or...
Chandeliers.
Whatever it is, Anne wanted us to buy. But it certainly was a highlight of our trip to be able to go to ABC Kitchen and have such a really nice, simple lunch. And
thank you.
I think the concept behind the restaurant ABC Kitchen is... It's pretty simple and straightforward, right, in saying that?
Yeah, I believe it's simple in the fact that we don't do a ton of the food. We try and let the products speak for themselves. It's simple in terms of the offerings, but it's complicated in terms of the sourcing. It really makes it a challenge to find so many things locally.
But that's a commitment that you made when you opened.
Yep.
Well, really do a lot with respecting vegetables on your menu.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some of those. We had fiddleheads, we had asparagus, we did all those great spring things.
And you came right at the peak of the spring season with fiddleheads and peas and sugar snap peas just beginning, and then asparagus was sort of sprinkled all over the menu, I think, when you were here.
Oh, yes. But you did wonderful things with the skate.
Yep, you had the skate salad, or sort of play on fish and chips.
I love skate.
You like chips, too.
Try not to eat that many chips.
but you did.
Did I eat all those chips?
No, I ate most of them.
Oh, good.
don't feel so bad.
So, now, what do you think is the strength of ABC Kitchen? Your connection with the local produce, is that it?
It's definitely a strength. I mean, I think there's a number of strengths in terms of, I think, from using these local farmers and helping our community in that way to some of the other green initiatives that we've taken with the restaurant. And then I think, you know, one of our strengths is just what we do with food. We try to make food just really, really simple and delicious. It makes you want to just keep coming back.
Everybody looked so happy. Did you notice that?
I hope it was because of ABC and not something else.
Unless they bought a chandelier.
Yeah.
Well, somebody next to us was having a big party. I don't know if it was somebody leaving or somebody arriving or
somebody
having a bridal shower. They were making quite a lot of noise, I remember.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem to matter. Everybody was very calm and cool and collected, including Chef himself, who came out looking like he wasn't working, wasn't even breaking a sweat. Although I'm sure you really were.
I would imagine so, yeah. Given the time of the year and James Beard Awards going on.
Oh, the year before, ABC Kitchen won Best New Restaurant, right?
Last year.
And it's 2011. Yep. So I'm trying to remember. I can't remember who won it this year.
Somebody, we were in New York at the same time as the Beard Awards a year ago as well, and someone said, you have to go to ABC Kitchen. It's so good. We must say that person must have been pretty smart because she also picked the Best Restaurant of the Year, Best New Restaurant, which is a pretty remarkable award.
Yeah.
What did you do before? You didn't just spring out an eggshell somewhere and become a bird flying.
Me personally?
Yeah, you personally. I mean, where did Jean-Georges find you to bring you to ABC Kitchen?
At the farmer's market itself.
What?
We met at the farmer's market, and I was shopping. I was working at a private club in Midtown where I knew his business partner, Phil Suarez. And we were shopping at the market, and we bumped into each other to start talking, and that was kind of it. I worked for him for well over a year before we opened ABC, helping open some other restaurants around the country. And then ABC took off, and it was, I think, an obvious choice for everybody for me to work over there. He knew it was a passion of mine to be using the local farmers and do this kind of food. Before that, I spent 10 years with Danny Meyer.
Where?
At Tabla and Union Square Cafe.
Oh, you were at Tabla with Floyd. How's Floyd doing?
We knew you were we knew you were somewhere else before. We just couldn't remember where it was.
Yeah. Is Floyd's place doing all right?
Yes, doing very well.
So are you a born New Yorker or?
Born and bred. Can't seem to get my way out of it, but
where?
I'm happy to be here. Upper West Side.
Oh, okay. And my old stomping ground. Where I used to be at 104th and Riverside.
Okay, yeah.
So, did you actually go around to other parts of the country when you said you were helping?
Yeah, I did. Atlanta, Arizona, Washington, D.C., Utah. One other, I can't think of what it was. And then I was also originally slated to be the chef of the Mark Hotel in the Upper East Side. And so that's where I was spending the majority of my time while we waited for ABC to happen.
Well, if you've been to all these different cities, you probably have some insights into how different is the New York restaurant scene from, well, I can just imagine, from Utah. But what about Atlanta or D.C.?
They all have their differences. I think we had some amazing meals wherever we went. I think a big part of it is just the sort of overall scene in terms of you have to eat fairly late at night when we're doing these kind of projects. So to go out at, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night in New York is not unheard of.
Right.
But to do it in, you know, Utah or something like that, it's a different scenario. You can get pretty much like a burger and that's about it.
Yeah, they kind of rolled up the sidewalk already, right?
Yeah.
Now, did you ever work overseas?
No.
You travel?
Yeah, you know, not as much as I used to. But we traveled a bit, England, France, Spain.
Well, how do you come down on this competition between London and New York as best restaurant city?
You know, I think just very, very different. Both are, I think, very eclectic in terms of the offerings, but I don't know. London's got a very great dining scene growing, but I don't think it's anywhere as big as maybe it is here in New York. And
of course, half the chefs in New York are opening in London.
yeah. That's part of it as well. I mean, there's a lot of big wigs like Jean-Georges and other guys who are moving there and doing things as well, so.
Yeah, Jean-Georges is opening a place in the hotel, right?
We have a spice market there, yeah.
Oh, Was it in a hotel?
Yeah, I think it's in W.
Yeah, okay, that's it. Tell us a little bit, or actually just tell our listeners a little bit about what's currently on your menu. Just a little food porn, if you would.
Everything's starting to change right now. We're getting a lot more tomatoes in. Corn is going to begin any day now in terms of being on the menu. Fava bean, sugar snaps, lamb's quarter. A lot of the early summer things are really starting to take shape on the menu. Cherries, strawberries, raspberries, peaches.
Can you describe a dish you have on the menu right now that would make everybody drool?
We're starting something tonight with a char-grilled chicken with a spicy barbecue sauce, and that's with a corn and shell bean succotash. So it's kind of a go barbecue chicken, but done in our style. On top of some good summer veggies. Very reminiscent of sitting around a big picnic table with that getting there so much a little bit burnt, and it's got the spicy sauce on it, and it's smoky.
Good.
This is kind of tricky, isn't it? I remember reading the menu and thinking, this is good old down-home all-American food, which probably fits the name of the restaurant, but then there are wrinkles in there. And you just mentioned one just now. How about another wrinkle?
We have one of my favorites, the heirloom tomato toast, basically a piece of our thick rustic bread that's drizzled with olive oil and cooked in the oven until crispy with a little bit of Parmesan cheese, and then sliced heirloom tomatoes on it and olive oil, salt, pepper, and that's it. I mean, it's basically as simple as it goes, but it's kind of an addictive eating.
It's a little bit like that crystal bread they do in Spain, except they use just sort of tomato water, right?
Rather than tomatoes.
You're familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yes.
In Spain, you must have had it there.
Yeah, they just rub the bread with the tomatoes.
Yeah, but, and then they toast it, and it comes out nice and crisp and crunchy.
Yep.
And you've had it, huh?
Yeah, it's more of like the pulp than this is like nice slices of tomatoes where you see the colors of all the different heirlooms, and they still have their structure and integrity.
Did you read that article about how somehow they bred in this thing to make tomatoes uniformly scarlet and ripe-looking, and it interferes with flavor? That's why tomatoes today are tasteless.
So they look wonderful, but they don't taste of anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we really work hard on sourcing these heirloom varieties that maybe are not perfectly round and not perfectly red, but are amazingly flavored.
Yeah, that's most of the collection we have in our garden. They're heirloom varieties. And right now we're just keeping our fingers crossed because some of the leaves are going yellow and we're worried that we might get the same tomato blight as we did last year. We hope not.
I hope it's not going to be one of those years for sure.
Yeah, you too.
It just breaks your heart. I mean, farmers have a hard time, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's especially when you see some of these farmers that lose a quarter of their crop or half of their crop to something like that. It's a ton of money and a ton of hard work.
Yeah, what do you think about this recently passed farm bill?
I'm educated enough about it. I've been looking at
the people who know, like Marion Nestle and all those people. They keep saying it's sort of mediocre at best.
Listen, there is a piece of hot news. We've almost forgot to cover it. You're expanding your space, or you're adding some new space right next to where you are now.
Yep.
Tell our listeners a little bit about how that's going to be the same and how it's going to be different.
It's really just a bit of a facelift to the space itself, revitalizing it a little bit and bringing some new colors and chairs and all those kind of things into it. And the food itself is similar in terms of a tapas concept. This will be a little more global and broad, but most of all we'll be bringing in our ABC sensibilities with the local farmers and things like that to the menu, and we're looking forward to it.
When does that happen?
Fall. Early fall.
so that people can be looking for it. Is it going to have a special name?
ABC Cocina.
ABC Cocina. Well, and you'll be sure to let us know about it as soon as you have a definite date?
Definitely.
Okay, we'll post it as soon as we know.
Yep.
Okay.
Post it and we'll put it on next year's list.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, we get to go back.
Yeah, well, we always go back.
Yeah, we always go. Well, Dan, I hope you're having a good time.
I am. I'm enjoying it immensely.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the menu. It was a pleasure to meet you in person. It's equally been a pleasure to talk to you right now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dan. Bye.
All right.
It's hard to believe our time is up for another Sunday. Well, we hope you'll join us again same time, same place next week. And until then,
bye-bye.